Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello and welcome, my little earthlings. I also want to say hi to Luis and Alien Girl 111 for being my moderators for today. Thank you so much. So we are all waiting for the Pentagon report, and we're hoping that it will say things that these are not Russian or Chinese. And when they do say that, it pretty much leaves only one other option. These things are from an unknown source, but then we have to ask, where are they based? Where are they hiding when they're not in the skies or skimming the ocean surface? And are they deep under the oceans in outposts, maybe deep in the trenches, far from prying human eyes? This is what we're going to be talking about today. I want to read your thoughts. I want to read your opinions, your theories, and your questions. I will do my best to read them, as I know last week was a little bit more difficult. But if you really want to make these things pop out brightly on my screen, use a super chat, which also helps support my channel. So let's dive into the topic of USOs. First, by just reading a description. So it goes like this. An unidentified submerged object, or USO, is an object or optical or mechanical detection phenomenon of unknown origin observed underwater that remains unidentified even after thorough investigation. This particular use of the acronym should not be confused with the other USO, the other one being the United Services Organization, because I've already made that mistake in the past. USOs have been seen by many people all over the world from way back in the day to present day. And we know that Earth is 2/3 water. So it's no surprise to the eclectic mind that there is more life hidden away from our eyes than what we may believe. USOs have been seen by many explorers, which we'll be covering, sailors, naval officers, fishermen, and regular folk getting around the planet using their ships, boats, or even flying through the skies. This is a definite topic, which is a mystery with a pretty long history. Did you know, guys? Did you know, and I didn't know this, did you know that Christopher Columbus in 1492 documented that he saw a USO? I don't teach us this in, history class back in school, and I wish they did, because that's like the most fascinating thing on the topic. So when the Santa Maria and the Pinta ships were traveling from from Spain all the way to the United States or the Bahamas, Columbus wrote in his travel journal that he saw a USO, and it goes like this. He says, he saw a wax candle that kept jumping up and down in and out of the water. Ending. As we know, right, Christopher Columbus and in the 1400s, there was no electricity and no one could even imagine having lamps or light bulbs or things that we have today. It was like witchcraft. So the fact that he said that it was a candlelight is really interesting. And I really like to pay attention to their choice of words, even when it's going under translation, because hopefully the translators keep certain key words such as candlelight, because they don't know anything different. And he thought that when he saw this craft, this USO that was going in and out of the water, because UFO sightings wasn't really popular at this time, he just believed it was a good omen or a sign that the ships were close to land. And it seemed to be correct. They were close to the Bahamas, I think like 15 hours away or several days away. I can't remember the exact range of how close they were to land, but pretty close. And then they ended up going, landing the ship in the morning where they met all the native people. There are a few speculations on this when Columbus wrote his sightings in his journal. And some speculations are that there were aliens looking at the island before Columbus did, which is kind of a stretch, while others thought that Columbus just saw bioluminescence or bioluminescent fish in the water. But what makes this sighting so interesting is that it was so long ago, and documented by one of the most famous people in American history. So I thought we would start pretty way back, and we're going to keep making our way forward to present day with these USO sightings. The next one is kind of one of my favorite stories. And there's a few. Okay, all of these stories that I wrote are all my favorites. But this one, I think you're going to like this one. This sighting is called the Utsurubune in 1803 in Japan. What does Utsurubune mean? And maybe I'm not even saying it right, but let's just pretend that I am. It translates as hollow ship in Japanese. And in 1803, in February 22nd, 1803, a strange ship washed ashore in Japan in Hitachi Province, so on the eastern coast of Japan. It was something the fishermen saw, but have never seen it before. They classified it as a disc-shaped vessel with windows on top and metal bands below. Inside this, they found strange writing etched into the walls, unusable fabric they likened to be bedsheets or carpet, and a passenger, a young, beautiful woman. She had red hair and red eyebrows, palish white, pinkish skin, and she wore long garments made of an unknown fabric. And her hands, they clenched a light-colored box of about 23 centimeters in length. That's going to be important. The writing on the ship has been compared to similar alien symbols found on the hulls of crafts from Roswell, New Mexico, and New Mexico, which is really interesting how a sighting from 1803 can still be brought to more present day sightings and to be seen as using similar alien symbols. That's pretty cool. So even though that the Japanese might consider this to be a lore or mythology, somehow, in some cases, some people find it to be credible and try to compare it with other sightings that have already happened here on Earth. The boat or the craft that was found in the ocean, when the fishermen saw it, they kind of estimated it to be about 3.3 meters high and 5.4 meters wide when floating near the shore. The small boat was a sort of a hollow capsule in the shape of an incense burner or a rice pit. It was made of wood, and it was covered on the bottom with copper plates, just kind of like what I said when I said metal. I'm being more specific, saying it was copper, and protected the ship from the steep rocks along the coast. It also had glass windows held in place by wooden strips fixed with resin. The fishermen were really confused because they've never seen not only this craft, but they've never seen a woman look like this, like very pale with red hair and red eyes. It's just not popular in Japan. They tried to communicate with her, but she didn't speak Japanese, and she looked different compared to anyone else. Nor did she really want to communicate with these fishermen. And that box that was in her hand, she refused to let anyone touch this box, guarding it kind of with jealousy. The fishermen, out of fear, returned her back into the ocean in her vessel, and it drifted away. There are several books that were written around this time that recorded the legends, three of them. All written within a few years apart of the event, but somehow keeping the tale overall consistent. One of the books, the very first one that was written, which was in 1825, which was just about 23 years after the event actually happened, and it was called The Stories of the Garden of Rabbits. The second book that was written was called The Diaries and Stories of Castaways, written in 1835. Finally, the last one that was written was called The Peach Powder, written in 1844. And even though all of these stories were written quite a few years after the event, they all had a very detailed description holding the same kinds of characteristics of how the woman looked, same characteristics of how the ship was described, and they didn't really fluff up the story too much. So they were all rather consistent. There are a few rumors that the box this woman was holding was pretty important and sacred to her because, as I had described it, she didn't want anyone to touch her box. And as we know, as stories kind of keep going from ear to ear, person to person, not only do speculations happen, but rumors spread like wildfire. I'm say wildflower, but that's not it. One of the most popular rumors was that she was a princess from another planet, and somehow she was exiled to be in this little ship. Maybe it somehow landed on Earth to do with, maybe she had broke some rules on her planet, and in that box was her lover's head. And that's such an extreme story. Obviously, we have no idea. I doubt there's even real speculation on the situation. But as we know, we all love hearing stories. We all want to make these crazy situations happen. This one being one of my favorite USO stories, just because it has such a history behind it, and like, who knows what else. Another story we're going to be covering is one that is in Siberia, Russia, in 1982. How are you guys liking these stories so far? I feel like I'm going through them so quickly. But these older sightings don't have that much description. They don't have that much understanding. So that's why they're going by so quickly. This one is a lot more detailed because it happened in 1982. It goes like this. Actually, I'll do my reading voice when I read the quotes. So, the Lake Baikal in Siberia, Russia, in 1982. Before we even go into the story, there's a few things I want to mention about this lake that are important and that are going to make sense in this story. So Lake Baikal holds several global records in itself. It is dated somewhere between 20 and 25 million years old. It's the oldest existing freshwater lake on Earth. That's an interesting point, which is going to make sense as we keep going. It's about 5,000 feet deep, and it is the world's largest freshwater lake by volume. I want to compare the depth of this lake, which is 5,000 feet, compared to how deep a submarine can go. A submarine can go about 1,000 feet underwater, and that's kind of where it stops. So anywhere below that, it's a lot of undiscovered water that we have really no idea what's happening. Swimmers and divers use this lake for competition and for practice, and say that the water is incredibly clear when it is melted. So this lake isn't really, it's not a private lake. People go to it. And that's where the story comes in. In 1982, in Siberia, Russia, there was a routine Soviet military training dive in this lake. While navigating the waters, while these divers are in the water, the Navy personnel noticed really odd humanoid figures swimming nearby. At first, they thought it was quite odd to see humans under the water while the seven military personnel were diving. But as they looked closer at these creatures, they had features that the divers had never seen before. Features that, yes, they kind of looked humanoid, but they could tell that they were not human. They were described as being about 9 to 10 feet tall, wearing silver suits and helmets. There was no oxygen tanks seen on them either. Here's how the beings were explained when these were how the beings were explained, and something that might send shivers down your spine. Each humanoid creature was wearing a tight-fitting metallic suit, complete with a helmet-like apparatus completely covering their heads. Upon close inspection, troops noticed the aliens were nearly 9 to 10 feet tall. However, the creatures soon disappeared back into the murky abyss. With something like this and the confusion that the divers felt, they went back to the surface to go get a net to see if they could try and capture at least one of these creatures and show them back to those on the surface. When trying to catch one of them, all hell broke loose for the seven military diving people. Suddenly, the non-humans fought back by shooting intense sonar waves. A powerful force rendered every crew member unconscious and rapidly propelled them to the surface. If any of you guys are divers or know anything about pressure under the ocean, you can't go up that fast if you're pretty deep under the water. So catapulting upwards from extreme depths can have devastating effects on our bodies, resulting in a condition often called the bends. Three of the squadron were seriously injured, but did not succumb to this affliction. The remaining fellows, needed immediate transfer to a decompression chamber. Unfortunately, there was only one recompression chamber in the region, and it was designed for merely two people at a time. But out of sheer desperation, four men entered simultaneously in an attempt to save their lives. Tragically, this last-ditch effort did not go as planned. Three individuals perished as a result of their superior's hasty decision. Those who survived the terrifying ordeal would be left with life-threatening disabilities. These creatures of the Lake Baikal are classified as the swimmers of the lake. And the military stopped investigating under that lake after they witnessed the terrible results when they were trying to catch these creatures. Of course, there is still a lot that is unwritten. That is, when I mean unwritten, I mean it's not out to the public. There's a lot of things that we still don't know about this case. We don't know if Russia is still investigating this situation, and hopefully we will might be able to find out. Zofa says, thank you, by the way, he says, Sumerian myths talk of the Apakula, fishermen sages who served the Anunnaki. They lived in the Abasu, a roof based beneath the deep where Enki ruled. There are some insanely incredible stories about the Anunnaki and what they've been doing on Earth. Maybe we'll be covering that sometime soon, because there is a lot of documentation of these kinds of situations. Could Atlantis be UFOs? Well, there's also a lot of research on Atlantis. There's a lot of books written, and unfortunately, the books that were written about Atlantis were burned down in the Library of Alexandria in Egypt. So I think it was Aristotle or Socrates that tried to recover the stories of Atlantis. So cool. This next story is pretty recent. It's from 1997. It's a pretty recent story, and it was documented in Parson Dennett's book. If you guys want to read that, I'll put the link in the description box below, because he is a huge researcher in the USO topic. So thirsty. Preston Dennett. I think I said Preston. I meant to say Preston Dennett. Sorry. I'll put the link in the description box below. This story is most recent, from 1997 in California, and get your popcorn ready, get some drinks, because you're going to be pretty mind blowing on this one. Hey, Jimmy Church. Good to see you here. Hi. Let's do this. So this story is absolutely crazy, and it has multiple eyewitnesses. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it's really good. So a woman by Joy Williams went to have dinner with her husband and friends in 1997 in a house in Monterey Bay in California. Right next to this home is the Moss Landing and a coal mine with smokestacks nearby. Remember that detail, because it's going to play a key role in this story. Smokestacks, really important. Excuse me. After dinner had passed, you know, Joy wanted to go out and enjoy the scenery of the water and along with the fresh air. But when she's looking at the water, she sees a bright green light just right under her, right under the water. And she's about a quarter mile from the shore. She sees this glow for a few minutes, and it keeps getting brighter and brighter, more intense with each passing minute. She calls her friends and her husband to come over. She's like, guys, come on, you gotta see this. Just to make sure that she's not crazy. As we all know with these kinds of sightings, it's always good to have a witness. When she does begin to call them over, this object begins to slowly exit the water. And she states, the kelp just slid off the egg-shaped craft. To give a little background, Joy was a military brat. She had seen a lot of objects in the sky and in the water before, but she had seen nothing that she could even compare to this one. And she also stated that there was no sound from this craft, even though she was about half a mile away from this object. If we compare it to maybe some other, you know, conventional craft such as airplanes, helicopters, even cars, we can hear them from that distance. But for being half a mile from this craft, there was absolutely no sound. Her friend, who has not come out to the public with her name, remembered that she had a telescope in her house. So they all run over to the telescope and they try to lay eyes on this USO. Joy explains that it had 12 portholes, all that were changing colors between green and amber. This happened for about 20 minutes, where it's just hovering. This craft is just hovering over the water, changing all of its lights from the dozen holes that it has. But then the ship, after 20 minutes from hovering over the water, quickly zooms up to the coal mine smokestacks. It was said that these smokestacks are about 50 feet high. So having that kind of understanding gave a better description of how So understanding these smokestacks heights gives a better description of how tall the spacecraft might be. And with that, they said it was about 50 feet wide. Here is where the story gets wild. First, I want to say hello to Pete, another moderator for this show. So good to see you. If you guys haven't checked out his channel, click it, subscribe. He covers really interesting stuff. Now, back to the story. The craft then gets really close to these smokestacks, and a large metallic arm with pinchers comes out of the back of the craft. I have not heard very many eyewitness account stories, guys, of where someone sees an arm come out of a craft with pinchers. And the fact that there were four witnesses, that's pretty good to me. So this metallic arm, all bent with pinchers, comes out of the craft from the back, not from the front, but from the back. Yes, a crab ship. Absolutely. And then the craft begins to insert the arm inside of the smokestacks. And Joy described it for another 20 minutes had passed when these pinchers are trying to look for something, who knows what they were doing in there. All of a sudden, it just disappeared. It got what it needed and it left in a blink of an eye. There was no exhaust to show what direction the ship went. It just disappeared. Joy, her husband, and her friends called the police. And I think the reason might have been just because to see who other people witnessed the situation. Where this bay is located in California, it's a rather populated location. So they knew that they were not the only people that saw this craft. They call the police. They tell their story. Well, they're like warming up to tell their story. And the police officer is being really understanding, being really kind. But as soon as they throw the word UFO, as soon as they threw these kinds of crazy topics back in 1997, it still wasn't very mainstream. The police shut them off and he said that, oh, what you guys probably saw was just a fisherman boat. I don't know about you guys, and I don't know what kind of boats these policemen see, but to my understanding, fishing boats don't fly, and they don't put their claws inside of smokestacks. I mean, that had to be one of the most bizarre explanations there possibly could be out there. What do you think? Do you think that that's a reasonable explanation to say that, oh yeah, a fishing boat, that's what you saw? Probably not. Fishing boats from another dimension. If these policemen knew that, then they're way ahead of their time. But I don't think they did. Lovecraft. Oh my gosh, what a fantastic writer. His stories, solid 10. Later, Joy contacted the local radio station to see if anyone else witnessed it or called in, and the radio station said no. 20 years later, in 2018, she wrote a MUFON account. Like, she wrote a description on MUFON, and I want to read it to you guys. So I want to read it. Let me look for it really quickly. Oh, quick thing before I find it. I just want to tell you that Jimmy Church will be interviewing Lou Elizondo tonight on Fade to Black. I will be there in the live chat on the YouTube Fade to Black channel. So make sure to be there at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Woohoo. It's always good to see them. Okay. So here is Joy's description on MUFON. She says, it was a large yellow glowing orb that arose out of the Monterey Bay. This was after dinner, and I was looking down on the bay from a property on the mountains in the Aptos, but with a clear view of the Monterey Bay. I saw a light under the surface of the bay, and all of a sudden it came out of the water with kelp sliding off it. It rose out slowly. And I told my dinner mates, a friend and my husband, and we all watched it. It rose from that area, which looked like it came out from the north side of the bay, and then took forever, about 15 to 20 minutes, to rest opposite of the smokestacks of the Moss Landing power plant in the air. We had a spyglass, so we looked at it through that. Unfortunately, no cell phones then. And we saw a series of lights around the perimeter. They were green and amber and yellow. It finally decided, I guess, to hover in front of the Moss Landing coal power plant. Don't ask me why we have a coal power plant here. I have no clue. We were looking at it through the spyglass. You know, one of those brass things people keep in their living rooms when they were living by the coast. And we saw an arm from the back, and it came out and over, and it extended things that looked like a long extended pinchers that came out from it, and it was apparently going to the smokestacks. I have no idea what that was about. I don't know what it was doing. We watched it for a while, and then, about 20 minutes later, it winked out. It didn't fly away. It just winked out. Like an eye closing. So I guess that was about 50 minutes in totality. Feelings, uneasy, uncertainty, astonished for an extended period of time, puzzled. That is what she wrote. Mav says, toxic sampling? Well, what we do know as ufologists is that seeing UFO sightings around power plants is not uncommon. When I was interviewing UFO Jane for Shifting the Paradigm, we did touch base on this in Houston, Texas, Baytown, and all kind of the industrial cities around the bay, around Houston. There are multiple sightings, multiple UFO sightings around these power plants. Are they testing the pollution? Are they trying to look for the minerals that were emitting in the air? We don't know. Do you guys like that story? I really enjoy that story. Thanks, Mav. Okay, let's go to the next story. They're recharging on the way to somewhere else. Do you think so? Do you think that maybe they're using the emissions that we expel into the air as a recharging mechanism? That's a possibility. I don't know. Paul says, winked out is a common description of UFOs. Do we think this is because something is literally vanished, like interdimensional, or moving away so fast it can't be seen? It could be both. In my humble opinion, it could be both, but it could also be neither. There are so many things that we still don't understand. There's maybe, I don't even know. Ben says, where can we request stories, here or on Twitter? Message me. You can put it here. You can put it on Twitter, anywhere. I'll read them. The reason to why I'm talking about USOs is because I put a poll out on Twitter and 50% of people wanted to hear Mysteries with the History talk about the USO topic. Here we are. Next story. This one is a lot more recent. This is 2013. Thanks, Lisa. Thank you. Now, true, I did vote for USOs. Awesome. Sorry, guys. Excuse me. I think I'm just like, I don't even know. Maybe I gotta drink some tea instead of cold water. Oh, sorry. Moose says, we know more about the surface of the moon than our oceans. I really like how you brought up that point. And this is very true. And something that even astronauts have spoken about. And I can't remember the exact name of which one. But one of them did mention that we are so excited to search space, search the moon, Mars, all these other planets, but we haven't even gone deep into our oceans. And again, it's 2/3 of our planet is the water, is oceans. And it's rather unfortunate that we still don't know much about it. Again, our submarines can only go 1,000 feet underwater when the ocean is so much deeper than that. I find that a little, in my opinion, just like disappointing. We can do so much better. This next story is from Puerto Rico, the Agua Villa Puerto Rican report in 2013. And this object was captured near an airport using thermal cameras. If any of you guys have not seen the footage, I will put the link in the description box below for you guys to watch. Definitely recommend it. It's really, really cool. And we're going to go into depth on this specific story. Christina has a fever, and the only prescription is a mystery with a history. I did it. Too funny. So let's talk about this story. Video footage of an object between 3 to 5 feet in length was traveling between 40 and 100 miles per hour. And this was recorded on high-tech FLIR cameras mounted on a DHC-8 turboprop aircraft operated for Homeland Security under the auspices of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection during a surveillance flight close to Aguadilla Airport in Puerto Rico on April 26, 2013 at about 9:20 p.m. local time. So at the airport and in this location, this vicinity, they see a lot of ships, right? I mean, like crafts, airplanes, zooming through. But the fact that we're talking about this story means that it was something incredibly interesting and something that they probably have not seen before. This video has been widely distributed on the internet, but it hasn't received the same kind of coverage by the mainstream media as the Tic Tac UFOs or as the gimbal footage. And it's still unofficially recognized by the Pentagon being regarded as leaked footage. And like I said, if you haven't seen it and you want to see it, I'll put the link in the description box below. So this amazing footage was shot by the Customs and Border Patrol agent who reported the sighting to the government. Then it became apparent that the government was not interested in investigating this sighting. Then the witness leaked the information to the public with hopes that someone would take interest in it. And it kind of took off. For those that haven't seen it, I'm just going to give a kind of brief description of what happened. So this craft is in the air and it's flying for a good amount of time. And then it plunges into the water, comes back out of the water, plunges back into the water, and then we see two crafts. This kind of USO is called a transmedium object, which means it can go from the sky and to the water at really close at the same time. Which it seems like a lot of USOs are able to also fly in the sky. When it splits into two objects, or when two objects emerge, this is the weird part. This is the weird part. And the debunking story is even weirder. This case was researched by the Scientific Coalition of Ufology, also known as the SCU, where there were about 6 investigators spent about 1,000 man hours looking for explanations and wrote a 200-page report on this situation, only to conclude that they had no idea what it was or how it was able to go about 90 miles per hour and enter the water with minimal impact. A lot of these USOs, a lot of these transmedium objects, when they enter the water, there's no splash. There is no wake. And as kids, even present day for anyone, when you see a rock near the water, you kind of want to throw it in and see how big the splash is. No matter what you drop in the water, regardless of what it is, it's going to make a splash. Even if it's a small one, it will always make a wake or ripples in the water. With these crafts, it's not the case. It doesn't happen. That is far beyond our technology to enter the water from the sky, going 90 miles per hour, entering straight in with minimal effect on the ocean surface. Pretty bizarre. The SCU believed that this craft did indeed split into two crafts and concluded that no bird, no balloon, no aircraft, and no drone have that kind of capacity. At first, when the video was leaked, they believed it was just two crafts that exit the water together and then enter the water once again. But with a closer look on the footage, it seems that this one craft splits into two objects. So what is it? Do you think it's mechanical? Do you think maybe it has some organic matter to it? We don't know. We don't know. Now, the debunking story is pretty funny. The story is by the Meta Debunk, stating that these things saw in Puerto Rico in 2013 were just Chinese lanterns in the shape of hearts, and they were all attached together, like three of them were attached together. But there are quite a few flaws in this story. Chinese lanterns can only fly up, and when the wind is no faster than about 5 miles per hour, which this UFO, when it was spotted, the wind was double that speed of what a lantern needs to properly function. Also, these crafts go 90 miles per hour. While lanterns are pretty slow, they're pretty consistent, and they follow the wind, and they take their time, and all of this stuff. But these crafts were jumping into the water, coming back out, jumping in again, splitting into two. So this debunking story is a little bit odd. I think, I don't know who could believe something like that and be like, yeah, absolutely. For decades, we have been told that they are weather balloons, that they are all of these things that just aren't really, that don't give a proper explanation. But I will say I do enjoy reading debunking stories because it's also good to have that, to understand the details of the other person, what they're trying to say, and then finding facts that go against what they said, like to rebuttal, right? That's the proper way to have a debate. That has, I mean, have you heard of the Aguadilla Puerto Rican sighting in 2013? Again, it's not incredibly famous yet. That could change. But it is somewhat well known in the ufology field. Zofa says, yes, I did. Good. Good. All right. I'm happy that you guys know the story. Next one. And the most recent drop here. And that is the USS Omaha. The USS Omaha, guys, which we have seen two pieces of footage for this sighting. One of them being thermal imagery, and the other one being radar. Let's talk about this one. Oh, so exciting. There's so much information on it. There's so much to say. So the USS Omaha had their encounter on July 2019 on the southern coast of California, which if you look at the southern coast of California, there are quite a few sightings of UFOs, USOs, orbs, all of the little everything is close to California. So let's talk about this. This object is not just a USO, but it's also a transmedium object. It has an incredible story and something that seems like it's already gotten into the history books. Recorded thermal imaging footage was captured in 2019 and released to the public just recently of the thermal footage and of the radar footage. But first, let me preface for the footage in case anyone hasn't heard of it. And I will also place the link in the description box below of the two clips. The thermal imaging is just a several minute clip with, and the thermal imagery camera was called the Sapphire. Right, it's a FLIR camera, captured an object that was hovering over the water, and then it entered the ocean with no splash. Again, this is a very important fact that we see in a lot of USO stories. When they enter the water, there is no splash. There is absolutely no splash. This was recorded at night when it was pitch black outside, and that's why it's not very clear footage. That's why it's pretty grainy, because it was caught on thermal imagery cameras. To the amazement of the crew members on the ship, not just one, but multiple people went to go out and have a retrieval to be conducted. Okay, it just wasn't one person that went out to be like, oh my gosh, this object crashed into the water, there must be debris. Multiple people went out to go look for any wreckage that was on the surface of the water. But they came back with nothing. It seemed like this craft, this object entered the water and it didn't surface back up again. Do you think that there are bases under the ocean? Again, two-thirds of the Earth is water. Our submarines only go 1,000 feet under water. What we do know is if you want to stay hidden, you go in locations that people can't really enter. Could there be bases? I don't know. Now, for the radar footage, it shows that about 14 objects are surrounding the naval ships. So this isn't just a one-time occurrence. This has happened multiple times for the USS Omaha and maybe for other ships. And it's not just one object, it's multiple. With one object, maybe you kind of brush it off and be like, no, it's not a big deal. But when you see multiple objects at the same time on your radar, it's a lot harder to cover up, to brush off, and to have people just like, don't question it. What is interesting about this is that 5 naval warships were said to be surrounded by these unknown crafts. It seems that these intelligent crafts were toying with them, kind of like playing cat and mouse. They would hover over the water for about an hour, and they would plunge into the water and then resurface, which things that we can't do. Even though the public received the footage of the USS Omaha, there are still written testimonies and details of the accounts that are currently classified. What we do know is that the UAP Task Force is using this footage as part of a briefing process to educate Congress, the Joint Chiefs, and military personnel on this matter. So even though we might not have all of the details of what's happening with the USS Omaha or other leaked footage, what we do know is that we are still getting something. We are still getting proof. We're still getting footage to keep opening our minds, to keep questioning. And it's also, in my humble opinion, it's also helping our scientists to push harder in trying to get the same kind of technology as what we're seeing in the ocean, what we're seeing in the sky. We might not have full access to it yet, but that could change. Back to the objects going into the water. When I think about physics, right, like just my basic understanding of physics, at any time when a physical object enters a body of water, there's always going to be a displacement of volume due to that, and it adds mass of that object and the displacement of the inertia of the object as well, which causes wakes, which causes splashes. And when you just kind of bring in some common sense into these topics, it's hard to debunk it in some respects. But what do you think? Do you think that all of these things are just easy to debunk? Do you think all of these things are just like totally, you can totally explain it? I want to hear your thoughts. I know I haven't been, I've just been reading. Do you think it's possible just to brush off these topics? Last thing, I think, for the time being, is I want to ask you about creatures. Do you think that there are things that we have undiscovered under the ocean, things that we've probably never seen before that might be really intelligent? Here's another story while you guys think about that. On the 19th of April, 1957, crew members aboard the Kitsukawa Meiru, a Japanese fishing boat, spotted two metallic silvery objects descending from the sky into the sea. The objects, estimated to be 10 meters long, were without wings of any kind. As they hit the water, they created a violent turbulence. The exact location was at 3115 North and 14330 East. If any of you guys have boats or have kayaks, go to that location and see if you find anything. And if you do, let me know. I want to hear about it. But also, a lot of us, as human beings, we are very curious. We love to explore. Even though someone else might have explored what we're about to explore, it doesn't stop our excitement and our curiosity to just level out and be like, oh, someone already found it. Oh, that's boring. I won't look. No, we still want to look and hopefully find something out there. That's the great thing about humanity is our curiosity, is asking the hard questions. Even though maybe not everyone asks the hard question, it is ingrained in them. It is ingrained in them to ask, what are we doing here? Why are we here? What's going on out there? What's happening? But maybe a big thing that we got to fix is our school system to help kids ask these questions, because they are our future. They are very important to see our civilization grow. I wanted to state lastly about go ahead and read everything in the comments. People have some really interesting statements that I wasn't able to get a hold of today, but that doesn't mean I won't read them for later on. Thank you so much for everyone that joined me here today, and consider supporting me on Patreon with lots of perks and benefits, including access to the Discord server. Keep an eye out for episode 3. I want to thank all of my Patreon supporters for having this episode happen. And go to Luis's channel on the Unidentified Celebrity Review for his show with Ralph Blumenthal, starting right now on his channel. Thank you, everyone, once again. Don't forget to keep your eyes on the skies and on the oceans.